Welcome back to the Measure Twice Planners podcast. Today's recorded conversation is focused on the benefits, misconceptions, and missteps of hourly financial planning. Our generous guests include John Abernethy, Mark Berg, and Eileen Freiberger, all certified financial planner professionals with a shared passion for providing financial planning services with the hourly model. If you enjoy this conversation, you can watch the full video version as well as over 30 hours worth of valuable educational content at measuretwiceplanners.com. The purpose of today's call is the topic of the benefits of hourly financial planning. I actually started as a fee-only financial planner advisor at an AUM firm that did wealth management, investment management for about 100 families, plus 401k administration and flat fee financial planning. Then I shifted to launching my own firm that only does advice only, so no investment management for any clients, project-based, 3 months, three meetings, flat fee. Every household paid the same fee for the same service and process. Now when clients are kind of coming back to do their annual checkups, like over 80% of them now are like coming back and saying, hey, like we want to continue planning. We want more Cody in our lives or whatever their reason is. They come back and I've been giving them a discount. Not a discount in terms of value, but in terms of I charge every client 75% of the cost the second time they come. So if they paid $6,400 the first time, it's going to be $4,800 the next time. Again, for another 3 month, three meeting process. But what I've realized the past 6 months is that complexity is not defined by dollar amounts or even financial planning areas in my perspective. I find that a lot of the complexity, at least in my practice, is actually on like behavioral emotional side and just needing more time with people. Some people coming back, I was spending maybe 10 hours with them. Others, maybe 40 hours. And I started to feel like it was kind of unfair to both parties, to feel like there was an undercharging and an overcharging or any of that idea of, definitely didn't want that idea of like subsidizing each other. Like we sometimes hear that in our industry. So I wanted to come to a place of valuing my time, valuing their time, setting mutual, like healthy mutual expectations and boundaries for the service I'm providing and not just how I'm being compensated, but how they're paying me, right? Kind of flipping the script of thinking about it from the client's perspective, not just my perspective as a firm owner. But we do have two special guests that I invited. One is John Abernethy. John Abernethy is a CFP professional. He's the associate financial planner at Sycamore Financial Planning, currently pursuing his master's in financial planning at Kansas State University, which I've heard is like the Harvard of financial planning. So probably learning a ton there, John. And also, you've worked in numerous advisory models over the years, including as a financial advisor at Vanguard. How did you become interested in hourly to begin with?
Yeah, so the first firm I ever worked at was fee-only, primarily AUM, but kind of service model agnostic and really supportive of however I wanted to work with clients. So I distinctly remember I was driving back from a client meeting one day, listening to the Michael Kitsy's podcast, as I'm sure everyone here has, Advisor Success. And I found a podcast with someone named Mark Berg, who I hadn't heard of, just like Cody. And it was fascinating because he was talking about the hourly model, which I'd never been exposed to, hadn't met an hourly planner, didn't even really know that was a thing. And as I was listening to that podcast, it just kind of clicked. Like everything he was saying made sense, all the benefits, all the pros. And from there, I thought, well, I got to reach out to the guy. It sounds interesting. And that's kind of when I got to know Mark and really got to know him over the past couple of years. He's been very generous with his time. He runs, as far as I'm concerned, the largest hourly-only planning firm in North America. He just really showed me that hourly, not only does it work, but it can work very well. You can be successful at it, serve a lot of clients that way, impact a lot of lives. So it's been really excellent getting to know him and obviously connecting him with Cody. Mark might want to take it from there and talk more about what he's managed to do. But, Cody already mentioned his book, A Matter of Time, which I read as well. And again, it's just a treasure trove of knowledge and wisdom. And it's really kind of inspired me to join my current firm, which is an hourly firm, part of the Garrett Planning Network, actually. It was interesting. I met Mark and read the book before I really did hourly work. So I was reading all these things and I was kind of wondering, is it true? Like, is what he's writing about, is this really the case? And now that I've actually worked under the hourly model, I can say it is. So everything he writes about is actually how the hourly model works in practice. So it's been excellent getting to know him, reading his book.
One thing that really fascinated me, meeting Mark for the first time, I know he's about to, he's about to probably launch some awesome knowledge from his 24 years of experience doing hourly planning, is that there's a lot of debates about fee models, compensation models, like how we're paid, how people pay us. Like, should it be based on values? Should it be based on time? Should it be based on complexity? How do we quantify complexity? But one thing I love about Mark and the way he views these things is, and also the purpose of this meeting, this is not a fee debate. This is not going to be a roasting of other models and like, this is better than, or this is the best or anything like that. This is simply a discussion about the benefits of hourly financial planning. We're going to talk about how it's done in real life. Mark is the founding principal and CEO of Timothy Financial Counsel. He joined the fee-only financial planning industry back in 1995. He's been an hourly-only financial planner for 24 years, which is incredible. He co-authored a book called A Matter of Time, Myths and Methods for the Hourly Financial Advisor, co-authored with Matthew Jackson. I actually put the link to the book in the chat. He didn't ask me to do that, and I didn't tell him I was going to do that, but if you want to learn pretty much like everything we're talking about, like times 10, it's all in the book. So if you want to read it or listen to it on your own, how did you get interested in hourly to begin with, Mark?
I had a similar path to both John and Cody, probably more like Cody in that I started in AUM. I was with a large firm, had a great career going, but saw that I was meeting a need that a lot of other firms were meeting. And there were a lot of folks that weren't being served, and trying to find and figure out or think through a more flexible model that could serve, you know, kind of all ends. And it was really initially through Cheryl Garrett, but then a lot of trial and error that led me to this hourly only model. You know, there are, and the book talks about a lot of benefits. Really, the goal was more the myths, trying to help people overcome the myths that surround hourly. But I also don't want to paint a picture that, oh, this is easy. Hang a shingle and all of a sudden you'll be making $500,000 a year. It took work. And really the goal of things like this, venues like this, the book, it's going to take about 90 years to actually make any money on that book. That was not the purpose of writing it, especially if I had charged my hourly rate for all the hours that went into it. It was really actually, you know, when John called us and others right after the podcast, the book was intended as kind of something that a tangible kind of handoff, next step. So this type of venue is perfect because it allows me to reach a broader audience and answer questions that probably there's a lot of similarities in questions people will have.
I really came down to three things, like three primary benefits of hourly financial planning, which I've discovered through discussing with you, which is number one is access to advice, really thinking from the client perspective, right? So really anyone with the ability to pay and the willingness to pay can afford hourly financial planning. You're able to help people earlier in their lives, right? You can meet them where they are. As you know, some people have, you know, negative net worth, but they're still making good income. So, you know, they might be able to afford an hourly or project-based structure. So what are your thoughts about that benefit of hourly financial planning?
I think it's huge. I mean, I think anyone here that's worked under a model that maybe had minimums, like asset minimums or, you know, even retainers, right? $5,000, whatever it might be. There can be sometimes a sense in which you get a lot of people reaching out to you that you want to help really badly. They need the help, but maybe they don't meet your minimums or they can't pay whatever your annual fee is. There's always a question of like, how do I handle that situation? Do I discount my fees? Do I just take them on and know maybe I'm going to be losing money on this client? With hourly, there's always that sense in which, again, like Cody said, if they have a willingness and ability to pay, I can help them, right? And I can get paid for the work I do. So that's been a huge benefit to me as I worked under the hourly model that I've really appreciated. And I think it's something that's unique to this model in a lot of ways. And that's part of the reason I switched, and I'm really happy I did.
A lot of people think of that maybe just advice only in general, charging for advice, is this idea of like, I'm going to serve people who are underserved and I'm willing to get paid less for that. One of the big myths about hourly planning is that hourly fees are only for middle market. Can you describe the types of people that you've been working with over the years and kind of what their financial weight class is, income and asset wise?
When I started, and this is again one of the myths, I assumed and kind of even on our website designed things to really target the middle market because that's what I was told would be attracted to the hourly model, and that people, mass affluent, especially high net worth, will have no interest in hourly whatsoever. And what I found was, I wouldn't say the opposite. What I found was, actually, it really transcended that kind of distinction. And this kind of refers back to what John was saying. We work with people who are just getting going. We love working with them. We have clients who are middle income, mass affluent, but we also have very very successful clients. And if you go on our website, you'll see we distinguish them by levels, level 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's a complexity level. It's not a net worth level. There is some translation. Usually, you know, more complex people usually have more stuff. Sometimes it's liquid, sometimes it's illiquid. We don't care. That's the beauty of hourly. But, you know, our clients, in fact, I was just exchanging texts with a friend of mine who's also an advisor, and she's been a great referral source to us over the years. Well, she's also my client. And now we work with her kids. And I love that. I mean, that is, so it's not an exception. It's not like we'll work around to, you know, our model and kind of squeeze them in. It's like, that is who we are. Working with the whole family is wonderful. And so that whole multi-generational, they talk about in the press, you know, most firms lose 70% of their clients because they don't want to work with their, you know, their parents' advisor. I do not see that as part of our future because it so fits what we do, and we're able to work with the whole family. So I think as a result of doing this so long, we have been able to work with more and more complex clients. I work almost exclusively with level 5 clients, and their balance sheets are anywhere from probably $40 million to $500 million. Hmm. Big clients, lots of complexity, lots of issues, tax, estate, investment, private equity, private credit, you name it, they have it. I love it. It's right in my wheelhouse. They, you know, we're their trusted advisor. You know, I'll bill a couple hundred hours on one client, and they have no problem with that because that's, you know, they're getting the value, and then the value and the time are directly linked. And yet, like I said, you know, we don't try to just work with level 5s. I actually had a business coach once upon a time that was really pushing me, and I was like, they're so much more profitable, and, you know, every hour and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, but that's not our mission. That's not what we're trying to accomplish. That's not why I left my old firm. I think that the hourly model just allows for kind of that beautiful harmony across clients. And whether I'm picking up the phone and talking to my, you know, $200 million entrepreneur, or picking up the phone and talking to my retiree that's 83 and, you know, a real simple situation, you know, I'm having a great conversation both ways. And I don't feel like, oh, I have to, you know, I'm getting paid the same way. It really is great.
One of the benefits, actually, number two, a nice transition, Mark, right? Number two, one of the benefits is this idea of value alignment. And John, I'd love for you to expound on this idea. You said when you quote somebody a fee, you know, before you start working with them, like, you don't really question your value. And what I mean by that is, like, you don't question yourself of, like, I might be overcharging this person or undercharging, or like comparing clients to each other of, like, oh, they're paying less than this client. You know, what is it about the hourly model that you don't question your value? And second, how does that play a part in terms of your own just like emotion and psychology as a planner?
I think there is a huge benefit to knowing that, you know, when I send a client a bill, whatever I bill them is actually work that I performed exactly. So I'm always being compensated for the time I spend working with that client. Other fee models, and it's not just overcharging, it's undercharging too. I mean, probably everyone on this call has been there where might be a client that has, just say it's AUM, right? A smaller amount of assets. You do a ton of work for that client, great work, but you don't have that much control in terms of what you're able to bill. With hourly, like Mark said, you can serve, doesn't matter the level of complexity, the work you provide and you perform, that's what you're billing. And I really like that. I know that I'm being compensated for the time I spend. I don't have to really think about it. I don't question the bills I send to clients. I don't worry about, is this too much, too little? I have my hourly rate. Clients know that. We give them an estimate for the time, perform the work, and we bill them. It's really that simple. So to me, that's the huge benefit, is I just don't really spend any time thinking about if I'm being compensated fairly, which has sometimes been an issue in the past.
And with that said, I know, Mark, one of the missteps, common missteps that hourly, you know, especially people who are like starting off hourly, or maybe even years in, they're still dealing with this kind of the issue, is they might underestimate the time that it takes to do work. Could you talk about kind of that misstep of, first of all, not tracking your time and knowing where the time is going, but why is it that people who kind of go into the hourly model, it's very common to undercharge and underestimate their time?
2/3 to 3/4 of our time in any given year is what we call ongoing work. So people that we have worked with in years past, some for a decade or two decades, and we continue to serve them. And I found early on that that time is is of real value, like real value to our firm. It's obviously of real value to the client. That's why they're emailing. That's why they're calling. So there is that temptation. Oh, that was just 10 minutes or that was just a little time. And we have come to the conclusion and have been very diligent on that. We tell them our time is our time is our time. That's all we've got. And so if you want to take, if you want to use some of our time, we are absolutely happy to give it to you, but we have to charge for it because that's all we've got. We don't sell anything else. We don't receive compensation in any other way. And if we're not serving you, we'll be serving somebody else. And so, you know, and billing for that time. So I have not found that clients push back. I mean, and let me just say, we don't have 100% compliance with our clients, never complaining ever. I mean, all clients. I mean, we're with a lot of people who
asking for discounts.
They're like designed to negotiate. I mean, it's just kind of the way they are. And, you know, one of the beauties of hourly for us, and this is obviously not a normal circumstance, we've just been doing this a long time, is we have a wait list and it's pretty long. And so we can effectively say, hey, if we're not a good fit, if you're not getting that value for the cost, that is okay. We don't even have to mention the wait list. We just say, you know, we feel the freedom. We tell them, if we're not a good fit, please find somebody who is a good fit. You know, if this is not the right model, but this is who we are. And what we find is almost every, oh, no, sorry, I didn't mean to, you know, apply anything. And then the issue's done, meaning they never bring it up again. So I do encourage, have those conversations, those tough conversations on the front end when they're, you know, rather than letting it fester, because it's very annoying and takes time. And not just time, but also emotional energy.
One of the biggest, like, barriers, again, it was maybe a limited belief, and it's one of the misconceptions that you mentioned, is this idea that hourly fees discourage existing clients from asking for advice. Could you talk about that misconception of charging for time or having people quote unquote on the clock, that they actually won't ask for the advice that they actually need from you?
Well, let me also broaden it to say that that reality is not just hourly. That's also AUM, retainer, whatever, meaning when people are about to do something that they know is kind of bad behavior, meaning, yeah, I wonder if my advisor would actually recommend that, they're not going to call. So it's not always just a price issue. There's usually some other issues going on. But I think this goes back to what you said before, Cody, which is the value. We are positioning ourselves and we have to demonstrate on an everyday basis that we are going to bring value to the conversation. We are going to bring perspective, either validation or ideation, to really help you make a good and complete decision. And what you'll find is there are going to be times in those first few years where you're still building trust, that they're going to not do it. And then you have the conversation. You know, you made this decision. In retrospect, maybe it wasn't the best decision. you've said, you know, how could we avoid that in the future? And so you're again kind of training them up and say, you know, it would have been a 30-minute call, or you know, you kind of just say it's cost benefit. It's like so obvious when you actually, you know, kind of frame it. So I would say to you, Cody, number one, this is a financial planner issue, not just an hourly issue, meaning, you know, all clients aren't perfect in contacting their advisor when they really do need advice. But with hourly, again, it's just a function of if you deliver the value, there's not going to be an issue.
I love that you mentioned that idea of like, it's not just an hourly thing. Cause you know, in terms of working with project-based where I'm working with you for 3 months, like ask all the questions you want. Clients who show a lot of generosity and gratitude, they often apologize. They say, I'm so sorry for this question. Or like, if the call gets to the close of the hour, like, I'm so sorry. Like, I want to respect your time. Like, I love that they respect our time. But there's this idea that we actually give clients free permission to ask questions. And one of my favorite emails I received from a client said, the thing I love most about working with you don't make me feel stupid when I ask questions. Right. So I think the kind of part of your answer there is that it's actually up to us, regardless of our model, to set pre-permission, set expectations that when they have a question, that like we're opening that pathway to them, that this is a relationship, not a transaction, regardless of how they're paying for that relationship. One thing, Mark, that you mentioned to me is, you know, I use this word engagement, and you said you don't like to, you know, you don't use the word engagement. Could you talk a little bit about kind of how you think about relationships as an hourly financial planner?
The worst word, which, sorry, you've used it a few times, is project. I don't look at clients as a project. I look at clients as my clients. And so I never use the term project-based or anything like that. And I set the expectation, we all set here at our firm, that when they call for the first time and they're talking, and we're talking about our services, we set the expectation that this is a relationship, that we're going to do an initial plan, but that's just step one. And actually, we see greater value as we go, as we get to know them better and better, we get their information in better positions so that we can be more efficient with our advice. And so we don't want it to be something that they look at as a pick up, put down. We want them to look at it as we're just ingrained and part of the ebb and flow of life, not it's April 15th, I need to do my tax return type of relationship. So it's a kind of an event, but that we're here and we're always here and we're always here and available for whatever the issue or the topic that you face.
Well, from a compliance standpoint, does your agreement with clients, you know, I won't call it an engagement letter, I'll call it an agreement letter, right? Your agreement letter, a relationship letter with clients, is it like it doesn't have an end, like it's just an ongoing, like never cancel or until cancellation type of agreement?
Yeah, we don't resend an engagement letter every year. It has our stated current rates at that time, but then it says in there, subject to whatever the prevailing rate is. And, you know, we send everybody our ADV every year, like you have to do. So it's disclosed and it's all over our website. So we're pretty transparent there.
The third benefit of hourly financial planning is business management. Whether you're solo, boutique, entrepreneur, like however big your firm is in terms of, you know, people working with you, it provides a clear set of internal levers, right? The kind of levers you can pull for running the business efficiently, specifically with time tracking. And John and I, actually, I'll kind of jump to John on this. We talked a little bit about this idea of budgeting. A lot of people think budgeting is just tracking where your money went, right? So same with time tracking. People think time tracking is just figuring out where you're like, hey, where did all that time go that's not here anymore? Could you talk about this idea of kind of that it's not just about figuring out where you spent your time, but figuring out like how you're going to spend your time moving forward?
Unless you have that information, you can't really effectively plan ahead, in my opinion. So when you track your time, yes, you know what you spent your time on in the past, but now you can make decisions about how you want to spend your time going forward in terms of what's most effective in terms of accomplishing whatever your own business goals are, right? So, I mean, and it doesn't just apply to financial planning work with clients. We're talking about things like marketing. Like if you spend a certain amount of time on, you know, Facebook every day or Twitter or X, I should say, right? I mean, how many clients did you get from it? Well, you can't just use the exact amount of clients you got, because it could be 10, 20 on all these different sources. It's how much time did I spend on those platforms? So you can start to make decisions about where's my time being spent best in terms of acquiring new business, servicing my current business. I mean, there's so many different opportunities you unlock when you start tracking your time. This is why I think even planners that aren't hourly should be time tracking, because I mean, it is just such a treasure trove of knowledge now that you have access to. They can help me make business decisions going forward. And I'm sure Mark would agree that it's been immeasurable for his firm and certainly mine as well.
Yeah, it cannot be underestimated, the value behind that. And I would wholeheartedly agree with what John said, that it does not matter what mode you choose to charge. Knowing where your time goes is one of the most valuable business tools you have in your arsenal. And what is so striking is almost no one does. and that's also true for hourly firms. I've run into so many that it's almost embarrassing where I'll say, you know, how do you charge? And even I charge by the hour. I said, okay, so how does that work? Well, I say it's going to take this many hours. And then I'll say, well, do you track that time? And then there's this kind of embarrassed, well, kind of, sort of.
Underestimate.
yeah. And well, how do you know if your quote is right? How do you know if you're spending more time or less time, if you're quoting appropriately? Well, you can only know that by actually tracking your time. And then you start to get a good feel and rhythm for your quoting. You've had so many opportunities, so many reps of doing that. So how much time am I spending on non-billable? My first aha was early on in the Timothy world. I got called and asked to be part of a golf outing. And they were paying. It was a really nice club. And I liked to golf. And I thought, oh, that'd be great. And then I did the math. 5-6 hours times my hourly rate. Is it worth, at that time, it was like $1,800. Is it worth $1,800 to get a $150 round of golf with this person during the workday? And what I concluded was no. And after a couple of years of me saying no to multiple invitations, people stopped calling me for these golf outings because I just determined that's just not a good use of my time. There are a few I've done that I felt like the time was worth. I was going to be in an environment where I could kind of share more about our firm or be a representative of our firm, that it made sense. But the beauty of this is this translates to, should I be, you know, involved in the Lions Club or, you know, all these different, you know, FPA, NAFA? It really helps you think, is this a good, valuable use of time? Because all time is time. And now I will make one distinction on time. I only translate the time per hour during the workday. So basically 8 to 5:30 to me, that's when I do that calculus. I don't look at it like when I'm home or the weekends or any of that sort of thing. I just look at it in a work context.
I was talking with my wife, Marissa, about this idea of like, hey, I might go hourly in 2024. And it was the idea of like, I'm going to track my time in my business so that I don't have to track my time outside of the business. Be more efficient and effective while I'm working so that I can not feel so bad about not working when I'm not here. A lot of us might be thinking, and I was thinking this like a month ago, if you're charging hourly, you're charging for inexperience, but giving away experience for free. If you don't know the answer and have to do research, you're actually charging more for your inexperience. And then things that you have learned through your 20 years and are just like off the top of your head, you're kind of giving that away cheaply or for free. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I remember that was one of the first statements that was made against me when I was on a panel discussion. I wasn't prepared for it, but I did answer it. And the way I answered it probably wasn't the best answer, but I basically said, well, we all do that at different points. When I was charged, when I was an AUM, and I'd say, oh, that insurance policy, you know, it was back when the estate exemption was $600,000 and they had $1 million policy. Oh, we should put that in an ILA. Well, that just saved their estate hundreds of thousands of dollars. And that was just an off the cuff, you know, what do you recommend? I think the way that hourly addresses that is, and you'll see this on our website, we charge different hourly rates. And I, who have been doing planning for almost 30 years and work at level 5, I charge a higher hourly rate than my associate that doesn't have that same kind of well of knowledge to pull from. Similar to a CPA practice, similar to an estate planning practice, where, you know, a senior partner that works on more complex things gets paid at a higher hourly rate than an associate that charges a lower hourly rate but has a lesser knowledge base. So that's really the kind of the gauge that moves. But there's no way. I mean, value-based charging where you say, well, you know, you got $500,000 of value, so I'm going to charge you $10,000 for that, you know, 5-minute piece of advice. Mm. You know, and in what you'll find, I mean, the way we do it here is I've gotten the question, well, if you are doing original research on an issue and you charge somebody 10 hours to get to that solution for them and you charge them, and then lo and behold, the next month, somebody new comes with that same issue and you're able to say, oh, here's the answer. It's like, well, that's not fair. Well, from a value cost perspective, that client from the prior month got the value they were looking for, and they were fine with paying the cost. Somebody else is getting the benefit of that the next time around, but that's a continuous cycle. They're going to have something that we've got to learn, and
they're hiring you because of what you've seen in the past too. Like, everybody's kind of paying for what you've learned from other clients in a way, right?
And paying for new learning that they don't want to do them for themselves. Mm.
Eileen, could you introduce yourself?
You know, I'm just delighted to be here. I'm currently the managing director of the Garrett Planning Network, and I've heard Cheryl's name mentioned, and I am just delighted to hear so many people are now, you know, following this mindset and doing this type of business model. For those that don't know, I started in the industry in 2001. I know many of the people on, you know, today's panels and all of this and the members. I had an hourly only company. So I was an RIA under the Garrett model originally. I later merged my firm and then I actually retired. I retired in 2021. But as some of you may know, Cheryl has not been as actively involved in the industry and her voice hasn't been there as strongly. So I'm happy to see the folks here and Cody and Mark and John all leading this charge again. So what's happening now is I came out of retirement just to help continue this business model and make it continue it to be what it was and what it should be. So the model currently is hourly project accessible to all. But as Cody was saying, nobody then is saying these other options can't also be a part of it. It just can't be led with. So for anyone interested in this business model, I think it's phenomenal that we're all talking about it and bringing it back out to where it was. My situation, 40 years in the industry, and I came out of retirement just to make sure this type of option stays available and accessible. It is very much needed. And my last point I just want to make, when I merged, just as Mark said, they could not believe the number of parents, children, brothers, sisters, the number of multi-generational relationships and returning clients were also incorporated into my valuations. So again, kudos to all of you for doing this, following it, Cody, Mark, and John for speaking to it and making sure everyone knows this is a very, very viable business model.
I really appreciate you, Eileen, being here. And we're going to probably have a lot more conversations moving forward. Of every model, they say, is it profitable? Is it sustainable? Is it scalable? And what I've seen really is that all models can be, right? But there's a lot of limiting beliefs around each of them. The first question is, how do you estimate the time required before the work begins?
For level 1 through 4, and I'm speaking internal language here, but complexity levels that are simple to moderately complex versus 5, which is complex for us. We ask them a series of questions, not dissimilar to what you would normally do just to kind of build a profile. We then say to them, it sounds like from what you're describing, you're likely a level 3. Level 3, and you can see this on our website, is this range. How does that sound? Okay, sounds good. Okay. Once you are off the wait list, then you will meet with an advisor who will then go from a range to a number. And we're going to be going into kind of further detail into your financial circumstance in order to get to that number. And that really bears itself out from what we talked about earlier, which is we've done this. This is all we do every day. And so just like anything, if you do it with as many reps as you can, as you do, eventually you get pretty darn good at it. And that's really where we're at as a firm, is we're pretty good. Now, we track our time. So we know, are we under, are we over, are we generally underquoting, are we generally overquoting? And we make adjustments accordingly. So it's a constant kind of fine tuning. Mm.
If over 80% of the people who come and have an intro call with us move forward, is that kind of the metric you use to kind of know your supply demand level?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely part of it. That's where I started. We could continue to ratchet it up if we wanted to. We kind of slow play it because we really want to stay accessible. But at the same time, you know, it's funny how people will say, I don't think anybody would pay $250 an hour for advice. Well, that's what they're getting with the CPA. That's what they're getting with, you know, an attorney. When you ask about attorneys, what are their typical hourly rates for an associate? Now I'm in Chicagoland, so it's maybe a little bit higher. But in the associates, it's the upper 200s, low 300s for an associate. So this is somebody just out of law school, couple of years, some knowledge, but a lot of not, in their 20s. And people don't blink at paying those rates. And yet I find that people value financial advice far more than legal advice. That's kind of our vantage point with pricing. And we started years and years and years ago at 150. We've kind of continued to ratchet up. We're at 350 as our firm rate. Our partners charge 450 and I charge 800 for new clients, which basically tells you I'm not looking for new clients.
Do clients pay a retainer for a certain number of hours up front?
I guess the way we would maybe distinguish that is an initial plan is a firm quote. So we quote the full time that we believe the engagement will take. And that does not include our meetings, our recommendation, like actual presentation meetings, which are usually one or two meetings. But the planning work is a set cost. And that's because we haven't built the trust. You know, they don't know us. Mm-hmm. We don't know them. So we feel like we need to have an identifiable cost on the front end. So we quote that. But then the ongoing work is open billing. And so, again, that's where we're trying to establish the cost value that mm-hmm. when they finish a review or an update, it's typically half to maybe a third of the original cost, depending on the circumstance. I mean, it's there. And then that just kind of gets them in the regular cycle.
And just to add for reference here, you know, I'm actually switching to hourly, but kind of similar to what Mark said, I'm charging a flat fee for the initial financial planning. Like right now, my pricing, I'm looking at like $76.50 for 3 months, a 3 month planning process. But then ongoing, it's $450 an hour with no cap. So I think what Mark's expressing here is that it is hard. Like, you know, if I would have a hard time hiring somebody hourly who I've never worked with before without a cap, because I'd be like, I don't know the value of this quite yet. Like, or I don't know if it's worth 10 hours or 20 hours yet. So I think it's nice that, you know, Mark definitely runs very hourly in terms of structure and time tracking, but he still gives a firm quote for that initial, I won't use the word engagement, that initial financial plan with a client. And then John, do you want to kind of express that from your side?
Yeah, we actually function in a very similar way to how Mark approaches this. And I would just also add one benefit of having that initial quote be essentially a flat fee is that most consumers have no idea how long financial planning takes. So they don't even have a sense of what, like, how long should this take? And like you said, Cody, and Mark alluded to it, what is even the value of this? So by having that firm initial quote, once you get through that process, we essentially get zero pushback in following, you know, follow-up reviews, because clients, you've already established that trust. So they have a framework now for how long it's going to take. They've seen the value. That's why I think that initial firm quote is really important.
What are your takes on offering multiple different things and just like giving them a menu of like, hey, you can do AUM or hourly or ongoing? Do you prefer simplicity or do you think it works to do multiple options?
Yeah, for me, we prefer simplicity. We only do hourly. And I think you've already identified some of the challenges with retainer. You know, you can work with 20 dentists. And I'll tell you, none of those dentists are like the other dentists. You know, there's no circumstance where everybody is truly the same. There's always differences. And so the hourly flexes with that.
So how often do you invoice clients? And do you charge by the minute every 15 minutes? Like, tell me about the practical application of charging, of actually like billing and invoicing.
I think we probably operate just like you do. We charge by the minute, essentially, just for the time we spend with clients. It's that simple.
Yeah, and we bill typically once a month. For ongoing clients. So work that's done over, and so obviously there's no work, there's no bill, but sometimes we're in the middle of an update. So we'll, you know, when we're finishing, we'll wait until that review is complete before we do things. But if this is just a, you know, a call, email, whatever, then we'll just do it, clean it up at the end of the month. And then typically at the end of each quarter, like we're really kind of reviewing all of them and really getting kind of cleaning it up, normal billing practices. And then initial plans, we do, you know, a traditional format. We do 60% up front, and then we do a final bill with the time once the final meeting is complete.
Are there any client profiles or engagements that are not suitable for hourly?
If somebody is just looking for investment advice, we won't do it. We won't. We feel planning is really the foundation, and investments are just one of the tools to help towards the plan, you know, to complement the planning. But, and so people who are really just looking for investment advice and love, hey, hourly is so much cheaper than assets under management. Well, to me, they're losing all the value. And so we just made a decision a long time ago, like that's just a non-starter for us.
We understand that financial planning like is comprehensive. I always say you can't give advice in somebody's best interest until you understand their interest. So some people might come to you and say, I think that you can tell me if I can retire, whether to choose a pension or a lump sum, you know, how much I should save for kids' college. Like, we could do it all in an hour, right? So how do you deal with, you know, prospective clients who want to kind of set their max, you know, without knowing their full picture?
There are people that try to define for us
how much time it'll take.
Yeah. And we're like, you know, actually that's our job. Because we actually have the best perspective on how much time it's going
to
take.
Hey, can I just have like a few minutes of your time? What that means, it's going to take a few minutes to ask the questions, not a few minutes to give the answers. And that's kind of a good analogy for it.
What we will do is if they've asked a question and it requires us to, you know, it's not a quick answer, we'll say, you know, actually I have to do this, I have to do that, you know, do you want me to do it? And if they say yes, then okay, they give me permission. If they say, I don't know that's that important. Okay, that's fine. It's more just setting the expectation that it will take time, not how much time it will take.
Right.
I think that's more of the key, is just to help them understand that, you know, we don't have perfect knowledge. You know, there are things that we need to get up to speed on.
Could each of you kind of just give your take on, a lot of states question hourly. First of all, they question the value of financial planning in general, but there are some states that either like cap their hourly fee or they just don't like the idea. If you were working in like a state registered advisor, how you might work hourly into, you know, your constraints.
One thing I would just say is a lot of people blame the regulators, but I kind of blame advisors in a sense, because our whole business model for decades has basically revolved around managing assets. So a lot of regulators, they're just not as used to just charging for financial planning. So it's a newer, it's not necessarily a newer model, but it's becoming much more prevalent. So now regulators, I think, are really starting to have to deal with it for the first time in a serious way. I'm not sure necessarily how I would deal with it if I was in one of those states. I believe maybe Utah, I don't know if it still is one of the ones that was pretty difficult to work with. I think they set a cap at one point of like $150 an hour, something around there. I'm not sure what the solution is in the short term, but it's definitely something that, you know, hopefully as we see more and more planners launch hourly firms, they'll start to understand better the model and why it's so important not to cap fees.
Well, we have 118 people on the call right now. So maybe if we all just send a letter in together, right? I do think, rather than kind of getting frustrated and giving up, like, I think that there's more awareness involved. I know, Eileen, you're probably willing to support some of those efforts moving forward. In terms of just communicating the value of what we do is not just based on how much money, it's based on like our time and expertise, and that clients want this. It's not something that we want. It's actually helping gain access. We're like right at time, and I want to respect the hour, right, for hourly financial planning discussions. I really appreciate all of you being here, including our awesome panelists, special guests, John, Mark, and also Eileen, for joining us. I hope you all enjoy your day, enjoy your next hour of the day, and start tracking it. All right, take care, everybody.
Thank you for listening to this recorded conversation. If you'd like to watch the video version and dozens of other interviews, please consider joining Measure Twice Planners as an official member at measuretwiceplanners.com.